This is Law Bites, a podcast with Michael Geist.
Failing a new bail within the next 3 years, Part 4 will cease to have effect. Its provisions will then be repealed, and the current provisions of the Election Act will become in force again. In other words, there will be a strong incentive for the political parties, for the House of Commons, and for the government to address this issue. Should we improve that system, that national regime that we're setting in place? And if so, how should we improve it in order to make it a true national regime, not only for the political parties, but also a regime that is better protecting at least the minimum rights of Canadians in terms of privacy, adjusted to the context of federal political parties? Of course, if we adopt the sunset clause tonight, the last word will belong to the House of Commons. Thus, we cannot exclude that the government could propose to MPs not to agree with this sunset provision. Yet, if the government were to do so, it will make it clear to Canadians that the parties are not ready to grant more rights to the voters than that they are provided in Part 4, the voters that they wish they get their confidence by supporting them.
That was Senator Pierre Dalfond in the Senate in late February, making the case for his proposed amendment to the political party privacy provisions in Bill C-4. For those that haven't followed, the government quietly inserted provisions that exempt political parties from the application of privacy protections in Bill C-4, ostensibly an affordability measures bill. The provisions, which come towards the end of the legislation, are deemed to be in force as of May 31st, 2000, meaning that they retroactively exempt the parties from any privacy violations that may date back decades. Now, the unstated reason for the provisions is a BC case that applied provincial privacy law to federal political parties. The government is now effectively seeking to render that case moot and provide all political parties with an exemption from virtually any privacy laws other than the measures found in the Elections Act. The government barely acknowledged the provisions in the study of Bill C-4 at the House of Commons and refused to even hear witnesses on the issue. The Senate didn't play along, however. It conducted hearings on the privacy rules, and the senators didn't like what they heard. Faced with a bill that would leave political parties subject to weaker privacy rules than virtually any other major organization in Canada, the Senate narrowly supported Senator Dalfond's amendment to the bill by including a sunset clause on the privacy provisions that give the government 3 years to come up with something better. The change is designed to allow the new rules, which, as the Senate heard repeatedly from experts and privacy commissioners, are not real privacy rules at all, to apply immediately but expire in those 3 years. The bill heads back to the House of Commons, where the government can either accept the change and have the bill pass, or reject it and send the bill back again to the Senate. If sent back, it seems fairly unlikely that the Senate will oppose the privacy elements once again. The government, in fact, has signaled that it is likely to reject the changes. In other words, having had its bluff called on privacy, it's going to push ahead and steamroll privacy safeguards when it comes to their own political parties. This episode tells the story of what the Senate heard on Bill C-4. It's what the government did not want Canadians to hear and would prefer that they ignore altogether. There were witnesses from advocacy groups, but I'm keeping the clips to privacy commissioners, both current and former, along with Elections Canada leadership. These are the very people government has tasked with providing advice on these kinds of issues. I start with an opening statement from Elizabeth Denham, who has the distinction of being both the former privacy commissioner in BC, the province whose laws sparked this case and now the legislation, and the former privacy commissioner in the United Kingdom, which has had privacy rules in place for political parties for many years.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm very honored to participate in this hearing this afternoon. I was invited because I was the information commissioner in the United Kingdom from 2016 to 2021. Also, the Information and Privacy Commissioner for BC 2010 to 2016. In my years as the head of a privacy authority in the UK, I had two priorities. And these were areas that I think the public was very concerned about. Number one was children's privacy. Number two, electoral integrity. And both of these policy concerns, safeguarding our children and safeguarding our democracy, continue to be impacted by rapidly advancing technologies, data mining, and profiling. And my opening remarks are really going to be about my hands-on experience as a national regulator in the UK, where political parties are subject to comprehensive data protection law and oversight. In 2017, my office undertook an 18-month investigation. We've been hearing about it with the other witnesses. And the investigation was into the British analytic company, Cambridge Analytica, Facebook, as well as 30 other organizations for allegations of the misuse of personal information in election campaigns. And what we found there was a disturbing disregard for voters' personal privacy by players across the whole political campaigning ecosystem, in which personal data is collected, shared, and used to target and influence voters, often without transparency and without consent. Political parties play a central role in this data ecosystem, but so do data brokers, political data analytic companies, and social media platforms. And I think this investigation, as we're still talking about it today, it was an inflection point when the public in the UK and internationally became aware of the invisible processing of sensitive information, their political opinions, their wealth, their age, their connections, their race, their purchases, their income, and their networks. And I think this was a timely investigation because almost 10 years ago now, in 2017, analytics and micro-targeting techniques were evolving. And we knew that taking action then to enforce the law was vitally important because more advanced tools such as AI-generated deepfakes and precision cyber attacks would only increase the risks to citizens' trust and confidence in future elections. Well, that time is here. In the UK and in the EU, there are comprehensive data protection laws that extend across that whole political ecosystem, including political parties. And the last time we checked, democracy was alive and well. Now, outside of Europe, New Zealand, South Korea, South Africa, Brazil, and many other nations include political parties in their data protection and privacy laws. There is no exemption there for political parties. Canada is an outlier when it comes to extending independent oversight for political parties' use of personal data and breach notification and reports to an independent authority. In 2018, the EFI committee, all-party committee of the House, studied election integrity in the wake of Cambridge Analytica and Facebook, and the committee unanimously voted to include political parties in federal privacy law. That was 8 years ago, and nothing's been done. Oversight of Canada's political parties is even more important today, given the government's desire to strengthen and preserve democratic institutions and preserve trust and confidence in elections. And I think Canadians will look askance at cynical efforts to take away their rights, and at a time when geopolitical unrest has turbocharged the risk of foreign influence and cyber attacks when hostile states are interfering with elections by deliberately targeting personal information repositories.
I've got one more opening statement to play, this time from current Privacy Commissioner of Canada, Philippe Dufresne, who came ready with some suggested changes.
Merci, Monsieur le Président, Mesdames et Messieurs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members of the committee, thank you for this invitation to discuss the privacy implications of Bill C-4, the Making Life More Affordable for Canadians Act. As Privacy Commissioner of Canada, my mission is to protect and promote individuals' fundamental right to privacy, and I'm responsible for overseeing compliance with federal privacy laws.
Personal information and the Personal Information Protection and Electronic Documents Act, or PIPEDA, applies to the private sector. Political parties, which collect highly sensitive personal information, are not covered currently under either law. Yet, we know that privacy matters to Canadians. A survey conducted by my office last year found that 9 in 10 Canadians are concerned about the protection of their privacy, and the survey also found that trust in how personal information is handled is becoming an important factor in individuals' interactions with organizations. As I have consistently said, privacy is a fundamental right. Privacy supports the public interest, and it enhances Canadians' trust in their public institutions. And this is true in the electoral context. In my view, and for these reasons, Canadian voters' fundamental right to privacy should be protected with a privacy regime for political parties that goes beyond self-regulation, one that provides meaningful privacy standards and that ensures independent oversight. Les règles de protection de la vie privée auxquelles sont
privacy rules for political parties should parallel requirements that are already set out for public and private sector organizations under federal law, while being adapted to the unique role that political parties play in the democratic process. I have three key recommendations for improving Bill C-4 to better protect electors' personal information.
Amended to incorporate privacy standards that form the basic elements in data protection laws in Canada and around the world. These include requirements for political parties to identify the purposes for which personal information is being collected, to seek consent as appropriate, to limit collection, use, and disclosure, and to put in place appropriate safeguards to protect the personal information of Canadians from privacy breaches. The bill should also provide a mechanism for electors to access and correct their personal information held by political parties. My second recommendation is that Bill C-4 include privacy breach notification provisions, requiring that breaches be reported to affected individuals as well as to an independent body, such as the Privacy Commissioner of Canada, Elections Canada, and or the Commissioner of Canada Elections, as this would provide important protections for Canadians.
My third recommendation would be to improve oversight by allowing for formal collaboration between my office, the Commissioner of Canada Elections, and Elections Canada. Enabling interagency collaboration would improve the work of regulators and would allow us to address complex issues that cut across sectors and jurisdictions.
Fundamental right that is directly linked to democracy itself. Prioritizing privacy protects Canadians. It supports the Canadian economy and it strengthens Canadian institutions. Prioritizing privacy is good for Canada.
Now, those are a couple of the opening statements that the committee heard. I'd like to cover some of the Q&A portion from some of the hearings as well. There are four witnesses that you're going to hear from. Philippe Dufresne, as I mentioned, the Privacy Commissioner of Canada. Michael Harvey, who is currently the Privacy Commissioner in British Columbia. Stéphane Perrault, who is the Chief Electoral Officer at Elections Canada. And Carolyn Simard, the Commissioner of Canada Elections. Let's start with a question from Senator Prosper, who focused on the differing standards between provinces and questions about enforcement.
I posed this question earlier in an earlier panel, and I'm curious about what your thoughts are on this. Part 4 is described as creating a national, uniform, and complete regime, yet it relies on each political party drafting its own privacy policy with no independent body assessing adequacy. How does a system of individualized self-written standards produce true national uniformity and compliance with the fundamental privacy principles that underlie privacy laws?
So it does not. As I said in my opening remarks, it does provide uniformity from the vantage point of each individual party, but not from the vantage point of electors. If there were standardized standards applicable to all parties, then that would be both uniform vis-a-vis the parties and uniform vis-a-vis the individuals. But that's not what this bill provides.
What would be helpful from an enforcement perspective would be a common set of common rules, not 15 different policies.
Further question, Chair?
Please, go ahead.
Thank you. And this is for both of you or anyone as well. Who do you believe is best suited? Is it Elections Canada and the Commissioner of Canada Elections? Are they best suited to enforce these privacy rules and ensure compliance among political parties, and why?
So my initial recommendation had been and would remain that the Privacy Commissioner is best positioned to administer privacy rules. That is the model that exists in Europe, in the UK, for instance. It's the model, I believe, in Quebec as well, provincially, that applies, and it's the model that exists in BC. For provincial parties and depending on, and until C47 federal parties. That to me is not a fundamental issue. I think that as long as there's an independent oversight, I think it can be somebody else. It could be Elections Canada, it could be the Commissioner for Enforcement. But my point of view is that the expert in the area of privacy is the Privacy Commissioner.
Thank you.
Senator Simons raised the question of why this was necessary at all.
Given that we don't know if the next election is going to be in 3 months or 3 years, it is tricky to speculate about what the time frame actually is in order to prepare legislation before the next election. Let me ask you a larger, I guess, more existential question. What are the consequences to Canadians' trust in their democratic system, in their elections, in their parties, if we don't have a way to protect the information, some of which Canadians may not even realize that they have shared, with political parties? I mean, at a time when we are worried about foreign interference, in a time when we are worried about private actors misusing public data, what are the risks to the confidence Canadians have in their electoral system if we don't have a better regime for privacy protection for voters?
So obviously, as I said in my remarks, I do believe that better safeguarding personal information would contribute to enhancing trust in the political process writ large. Hopefully, we shouldn't wait until we have a Cambridge Analytica or some major issue before protections are put in place. The other thing I can offer is that when we did consultations back in 2021 in preparations for my recommendations, the surveys showed that Canadians do want some rules around the use of personal information by political parties. That is something that came out very clearly. And so they expect that in terms of reinforcing their confidence in the process.
As far as we're concerned, from the enforcement perspective, it's this perception, public perception, that we may be able to do more, and in practice, we won't be able to do that much. So,
do you feel that there is an urgency to passing this law, separate and apart from the concern about obviating the BC court case? Do we need to rush to pass this, or would we be better served to take a step back, resurrect C-65, improve C-65 in light of new technological developments, and go forward with a regime in which Canadians had confidence and in which parties themselves would understand the level playing field, so that there isn't going to be what Mr. Hatfield from Open Media, I think, maybe it was Mr. Israel, called a race to the bottom as parties lower their standards in order to outcompete one another.
Firstly, I have more questions than answers for the committee in that regard. One question that I have is why the current provisions that were put in place in C-47, which already provides that the regime in the Act is a complete code, why that is not adequate to deal with the concerns of the BC litigation. I don't know the answer to that question, but there is already a provision in the Act that says that the rules that exist now, which are at least as robust in their substance than C4. C4 does add a few things, like an annual statement by the officer of the party, like an annual meeting. So there are some enhancements to the regime, but in terms of the substantive requirements, I don't see any enhancements. And it is a complete code already. That's set in the legislation as it exists today. So I can't answer really the need for the pressing nature of this provision.
Senator Arnott. The chair of the committee asked the witnesses why they weren't consulted and for some opinions on some of the complexities of enforcement.
I just want to say this. I find it very surprising, in answer to Senator Tanis's question, that neither of you were consulted in this legislation. In your testimony, you used the words a lot of ambiguity, a lot of gaps. Legislative draftspersons, those kinds of things, especially ambiguity, are anathema. How is it that these gaps exist, in your opinion? Do you find that it would be wiser to, in fact, deal with the gaps, eliminate the ambiguities before this becomes legislation? We've heard that this bill, in some people's opinion, is unsalvageable. It needs to be studied on its own. It's too important to Canadians in our democratic principles to have this bill go through in this form at this time. And that some people have said that it is a cynical attempt to remove privacy rights from Canadian citizens. I'd like you to comment on that. I think this is very concerning, and I think that it calls upon the Senate to use sober second thought on these very issues. But in order to do that, we need some evidentiary basis to make that foundation. And I'm hoping you can answer my questions and help give us that evidentiary foundation.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. I do believe that my role is limited here to informing the Senate of the limitation of this bill, and the Senate is to decide, of course, how they, as a body, want to exercise their function vis-a-vis the other place. I do not see in this piece of legislation any reduction of the privacy protections that are already very limited in the Canada Elections Act, nor do I see any significant enhancements. If I could use the precautionary principle here, I don't think that this bill does harm to privacy. It just does not enhance the privacy protection. And to the extent that one would say that it does, I'm yet to see how that is so.
Samar?
I would echo what Mr. Perrault just said. Maybe in addition to that, I would say that from an enforcement perspective, I would reiterate the fact that there would be this public perception that we can achieve more than what we can do in reality.
Would you say, what specific enforcement actions would be available if a political party's published policy on privacy issues, for instance, is clearly inadequate or clearly has not been followed in practice by a political party?
Different questions. So a party's privacy policy could be, for example, on the sharing information we share with whomever. But that is not. There is no limitation in this legislation or in the existing act in that regard. It could be we sell the information, which C-65 would have prohibited. Okay. So for the bar is not very high for the policy. It must cover the activities that the party does with the personal information. In that regard, it should provide a measure of transparency regarding the practices of the parties, but it doesn't hold those practices to any particular standard. For example, it doesn't say the party should collect only what it needs to do carry on its activities, or that it should only share under certain. It doesn't do that. That's the in terms of the quality of the policy. If it's not satisfactory from the point of view of someone observing the policy, it's still compliant with the legislation. Now, if there is a policy of some substance and it is not observed, then there is, in principle, there are mechanisms for compliance in this bill, with the limitation that the commissioner mentioned.
Simar, do you want to add it?
Yes, so from our perspective, I would use a French expression, like there's a risk that we on nivelle vraiment par le bas ici parce que
it's really going to the lowest common denominator, because the risk is that we'll limit ourselves to what is required in the act. We've just heard some examples here, and it's important to communicate another risk.
So if there were such a scenario, like there's no currently any obligation to notify the affected individuals or to let us know, like to let us know that there's such a breach. So it would be hard for us to be informed to receive a complaint, you know, from affected individuals, or again, receive this information directly from the political parties. I don't know if Mr. Bisson, maybe.
If I could just, you know, add some color to the commissioner's comments, for example, to add to the level of complexity from an investigative perspective, even if we were to be informed of a breach. Or through the receipt of a complaint, for example, we would then be dependent on finding the policy that applies, so the party's policy that applies, knowing that that's one of 15. We'd then have to look at the policy that was in effect at the time of the alleged contravention. So if a policy gets updated 3 times in a year, we have to make sure we're getting the right version, and therefore if there's no preservation requirements, we may not be able to obtain that, and because we don't have powers to compel either, we rely on voluntary cooperation then to obtain evidence. And then it's going to depend on each party's actual policy to be able to actually prove there was contravention. And as Madame Simal said, both in her opening statements and right now, and in terms of by setting the bar relatively low, It's going to be hard unless parties add to those minimum requirements to actually find a contravention, or it might be written in language that is ambiguous to the point where it's difficult to find who we might be investigating right off the bat.
Back to Senators Prosper and Simons, who raised issues around both standards and, in the case of Senator Simons, the issue of retroactivity.
Thank you to our witnesses. I have a question for you, Mr. Dufresne. And it's a question I asked previously, but I just want to get your take on this. Part 4 is described as creating a national uniform and complete regime, yet it relies on each political party drafting its own privacy policy with no independent body assessing adequacy. How does a system of individualized, self-written standards produce true national uniformity and compliance with the fundamental privacy principles that underlie privacy law?
Well, my concern that I'm flagging is that there is a bit of self-regulation in that, in the sense that the parties get to decide. There's good transparency. I think that was highlighted by Monsieur Perrault. They have to say what they're going to do. But I think that there are no minimum requirements. And so that could lead to requirements that are too low. It could also lead to requirements that are different, between different political parties. So that doesn't bring that certainty, that trust, that consistency that, in my view, Canadians deserve. So that's a challenge there. And then in terms of the independent third party, there would be an independent third party, the Commissioner of Canada Elections, in this bill that would look at compliance with the policy. But again, that's only so strong as the policy is, and that's in the hands of the political parties.
One more question?
Yes.
And this is for yourself, Mr. Dufresne and Mr. Harvey. Were either of you consulted on the drafting of this particular bill, Bill C-4?
No, we were not.
Mr. Harvey? Thank you.
No.
Thank you. Senator Simons.
Thank you very much. My question is going to be for Mr. Harvey, although I thank Mr. Dufresne very much for being here. Mr. Harvey, I wanted to talk about two things. One is that sense of patchwork. I mean, the Privy Council, when they were here earlier, and the party's lawyers all said, you know, it will be a terrible thing if we have a patchwork system where different provinces have different regulations. And I take their point, but I would like to hear your argument for in rebuttal. I would also like to hear you speak a little bit more about the issue of the law being retroactive, because most of our witnesses have not addressed that point. And I want you to explain to us clearly what retroactivity would mean for the privacy of people in British Columbia who have been protected for 20 years, who may have that privacy retroactively taken away.
Yes, thank you, Senator, for the question. With respect to the patchwork nature, you know, it's important for me to underline that as a commissioner for British Columbia, I only really have a mandate to speak about the people of British Columbia and about the applicability of laws in British Columbia, and in particular about the applicability of PIPA. So in our case, it is the people of British Columbia that decided 22 years ago through their legislature that they wished to have privacy protections from all organizations unless they were protected by some other statute. So, for example, PIPA does not cover provincial public bodies. PIPA does not cover federal public bodies, you know, ports, federally regulated organizations like ports and so on. But there is no statute that protects political parties, and BCers believe that they wish to have that level of protection from all organizations. I think it's important to recognize that if these privacy rights were removed, so again, I won't comment on whether C4 is actually valid in successfully doing that, but it purports to do that, remove the rights, the PIPA rights that BCers have, and replace them with something else and less, then BCers would have lower privacy rights vis-a-vis federal political parties than they would have via their neighborhood auto shop or their kids' swim team. And in my view, in the current environment, political parties, which gather such vast amounts of information and do things with it that are intended to influence our democratic behavior, deserve a high level of protection. I think that's what BCers intended with PIPA 22 years ago. To have those protections removed and to have them removed retroactively for the past 22 years is really, in our view, as I stated, a frustration of the democratically expressed will of the people of British Columbia.
Listening earlier when my colleague Senator Prosper read from a letter that was written to say, oh, you know, we shouldn't bother to be hearing from the applicants in the case before the BC Court of Appeal. The issue is moot because don't worry, the Senate, you know, the government will have had royal assent, you know, tout à coup in a moment. I mean, what do you make of that as a party to that litigation? Is that cricket? To write a letter saying that the trial doesn't need to go ahead because they're guaranteeing that Parliament is going to pass this bill and that the Senate is going to give royal assent?
Well, you know, I want to be cautious about commenting on matters before the courts, but I think that it is welcome that this committee is carefully studying the implications of of these amendments as they would apply to, again, retroactively to BC's PIPA and as they would relate to the matter that's currently before the court. So I certainly welcome the senator's attention to this matter.
Senator Tanis wanted to focus on the issue of lack of consultation once again, this time focused on the Privacy Commissioner Dufresne.
My questions are for Mr. Dufresne. We heard that you weren't consulted, and I just I was reminded of this when Senator Batters mentioned the unanimous standing vote in the House of Commons, and I just want to ask you about the committee process there. I understand you weren't invited to testify at the committee, but you submitted a brief. Is that right?
I was not invited to appear before the committee. I proactively submitted a letter to the committee.
Great. And you had three suggested amendments. Did you see, or did your staff see, as they monitored both debate in the House of Commons or just in the committee, was there any, and I noticed that there were briefs put in by others that we've actually heard from here. I could not find anybody that appeared to be testifying on Part 4 with the exception of the lady from Privy Council. She I think, did appear. But did you see anything or did your staff see anything in the committee hearings or in the House of Commons debates that would give any evidence to MPs having an informed discussion about this particular matter that we're seized with?
Well, I don't want to comment on the proceedings before the other place, but I will simply note that certainly my recommendations were not adopted. The bill has not been changed to reflect those recommendations.
Did you hear anything? Was it discussed? Was anything discussed at the House of Commons that you saw that would give evidence to the fact that they gave this any consideration at all?
I did not see a debate on the specific recommendations that I made.
Did you see anything on Part 4 at all, committee, other than the testimony from the lady from the PCO?
I'd have to confirm with my team, but what I can say is I did not see a debate on my recommendations.
Okay, fair enough.
Senator Dalfond, echoing some of the comments that he made to the full Senate, focused on the lack of debate as well as highlighting the approach in the UK.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There, during 20 seconds at the parliamentary committee on the other side, a witness summarized Part 4, received no questions, and that was it. So we know that political parties are all very different from each other. I understand that. But in the UK, I imagine you've got contacts, you're in communication with the privacy commissioner there. The law applies to everyone the same way, to Parliament, private organizations, and so on and so forth. And the privacy commissioner manages all of that. So how does it work with political parties there? Well, the regulation applies to them in the UK, the same as it does in Quebec and in Europe. There's a general regulation. And what's interesting there is that Recital 56 says that if the operations of a democratic system requires political parties obtaining information or opinions of the public, that's in the public interest as long as there are checks and balances. So it's important to keep this matter in its proper context. And I think we should do the same here. Protecting personal information is applied to large corporations, small organizations. It has to be user-friendly. It has to be practical. So I think this should apply to political parties. I exchange a lot with my international counterparts, and no one has ever raised any concerns about the applications of these rules to their political parties.
And finally, anticipating the prospect of a Sunset Clause proposal, Senator Simons focused on whether or not a stopgap measure would work, as well as the lack of penalties that are found in the legislation.
I want to pick up on a question Senatrice Mancillon asked, and something that Senator Kushner has also referenced a couple of times. We're being told, or at least it's being intimated to us, I want to be careful here, that this is sort of a stopgap emergency measure and that the government will attempt to come back at some future date with a more rigorous, robust privacy regime. And so the question I have for you is there a danger if we adopt this lower standard and put it into law that it will be harder later to apply a more rigorous standard? I mean, I could imagine the parties might say, contrary to what they said here, well, wait a minute, these rules are working for us. We don't want to switch. So I'm just worried that the argument that we should accept this as a stopgap measure could paint us into a corner down the road.
Well, I think what I will say is that time is a precious commodity for parliamentarians, and I think that there is always a challenge in getting legislation before the House, before the Senate, and so my concern would simply be, if we're saying it's going to be done later, will it be done later? Will there be enough priority urgency to the matter for it to come? As I said, we've been advocating for law reform for the Public Sector Privacy Act for many years. This legislation for the departments was adopted in the early 80s. We have PIPEDA. It was adopted in 2000. And to this day, I do not have order-making powers or fine-making powers, which we stand out in terms of the international comparators. We've been advocating for this for many years. Since I've started in this role, I've been advocating for this, and we're hoping to have legislation introduced. So I'm optimistic, but I'm well aware that there is a finite number of parliamentary days available.
I guess my concern is, if we adopt this, people will say, oh, well, then we don't need anything else. Mm-hmm. And we've already heard, we heard testimony this morning, which made me giggle aloud on the public record, that the fine for violating this would be $50 for an individual and $300 for a party, which seems, I believe the technical term would be de minimis. And you wouldn't have any powers. Those powers would rest with the electoral regime.
And by adopting this, this bill states that this is the national regime. This is Parliament's intention. This is how we want to govern this across the country. So I think this is why, certainly, you're hearing from me the need to make this robust. And certainly having a national regime is not something that I oppose as the federal commissioner, but it has to be to the level that Canadians expect. And in my view, Canadians expect more than self-regulation in this context.
Should it be to the level that British Columbia has demonstrated or that Quebec has generated? I mean, I don't necessarily mean that it should be like PIPA in BC, but shouldn't it have at least the same standards as a common denominator that other provinces have already brought forth?
Well, in those provinces are deemed substantially similar to PIPEDA, so I say the 10 fair information principles in PIPEDA have to be there. Again, there may need to be contextual interpretation of it for the realities of parties. That would happen. But those principles are there in Canada. They're there internationally. And we would need, in my view, a good reason to lower the bar.
That's the Law Bites podcast for this week. If you have comments, suggestions, or other feedback, write to lawbites@pobox.com. That's LAWBYTES at pobox.com. Follow the podcast on Twitter at LawBitesPod or follow Michael Geist at MGeist. You can download the latest episodes from my website at michaelgeist.ca or subscribe at iTunes, Google, or Spotify. The Law Bites podcast is produced by Gerardo Lebron LeBoy. Music by the LeBoy brothers, Gerardo and Jose Lebron LeBoy. Credit information for clips featured in this podcast can be found in the show notes at michaelgeist.ca. I'm Michael Geist. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.